This is Tall Boy Radio. Each week, your hosts, Beans, Gaz and Andy, grab a beer and discuss whatever it is that's on our minds. We try to keep things uncomplicated. The premise for this podcast is as simple as we are. Not only can you listen to us at tallboyradio.com and on every podcast platform, you can also watch the video version on YouTube. Just search for Tall Boy Radio or click on the link on our website. If you have a story and want to feature on the show or just want to get in touch, drop us an email at mail@tallboyradio.com or leave us a comment on social media. At Tallboy Radio on Twitter and Facebook, and at Tallboy Radio Podcast on Instagram. Or you can leave us a message on the Anchor app, which we can play on the show. Right, the show is about to begin, so go grab yourself a cold one, kick back, and enjoy. Welcome back to episode 93 of Tall Boy Radio. We tried something a little bit different last week. It was a little bit more serious. Myself and Andy tried to keep it a little bit lighthearted and a little bit upbeat with a few jokes. I hope you appreciated that. Certainly the feedback that we've gotten off that episode has been really, really positive. So thank you for that. But the good news for all regular listeners is he's back. The man who likes pineapples on his pizza. Do you want to introduce yourself and say hello, guys?
Yeah, listen, I've missed the last couple of weeks. I've been sort of laid up with a bit of the lurgy, and it knocked me for six, really. It's weird. Really, really, really looking forward to this. Obviously, miss hanging out with you guys, miss having a beer with you guys, and just if you are watching on YouTube, I am drinking out of a St. Bernardus glass, and I'm drinking, actually, I've got a couple of beers. Beartown Trap is the first one. And myself and the good wife went to Garden Centre. We're just looking for bits and bobs. And I walked around and there was an astonishing array of plum porters there. So I thought, oh, I'll go and have a look, see what else they've got. And Adam raves on about Beartown. I think it might be the first couple of beers I've drank from them. But that trap is, it's 4.8% and it's dry hopped Pilsner. It's a beaut. So I'll be definitely having that again.
Fair play, fair play. Andy?
Good to see Gaz is back. Hopefully he's had a whiskey and sorted himself out. I'm on the old bottle of left, drinking out of my new cup.
There we go.
Oak tankard.
Dude, that looks absolutely huge. It's like a barrel. What a tankard.
It's like 500 mil inside, so a couple of bottles, well, a bottle and a half, whatever.
It looks a lot bigger. Looks a lot bigger.
What are you then drinking, Ad?
I'm on a beer by Thornbridge, which I'm sure you'll have had, the Jaipur, their IPA, which is a really decent one. Well, I've got their DDH Jaipur to try tonight. It's a double dry hopped one. Same strength, I think. It's about 5.9%, but it's got a bit of extra hoppage in it. I've got to be honest, dude, it's pretty good. A lot smoother than I was expecting it to be. Sometimes when you add that extra hop, you can rip the back of your throat out. As you can probably hear from my throat right now, I'm still not 100%. I've still got the lurgy. So where do we want to start then this week? Because one of the things we said we'd like to do, Gazza, is get your opinions on some of the questions then that we asked last week. Have you listened back to the episode?
Yeah, so I did listen back and I sort of tweeted something like yes, no, maybe yes, or whatever. I can't remember like the order of the questions and stuff. I think so, listening back, I mean, I was sort of wondering where it was going to go at first, and I wonder whether or not it might be slightly sort of a darker sort of episode. But actually, you guys sort of continue to make it relatively sort of lighthearted and stuff. I mean, I think the nurses one with the, you know, should they be forced to be vaccinated? No, I don't think so. Just because I think it would be perhaps morally and ethically wrong to say that you have to be forced to do something. I think it's a choice. And I don't think you should be, I think you mentioned it, Ad, actually, I don't think you should be sort of criticised or at risk of losing your job if you choose not to do that. So I think I was pretty much with you guys, I think, on that one. I think the euthanasia one, I have quite a strong opinion on this because obviously, you know, those that know me know that sort of I lost my mum. She was sort of 49 years old, so she died 3 days before her 50th birthday. And I was sort of 25, I think, something like that, 25, 26 at the time. And to see somebody suffering over a prolonged period of time, knowing that actually there was no outcome and, you know, knowing that it was terminal, I absolutely would have been in favour of sort of euthanasia. And I get the point that, you know, Dave was playing devil's advocate. And where does your, how do you monitor and how can you measure somebody's state of mind, their compos mentis? You know, at one point they might be have quite a lucid moment and other times they might not. And so that becomes very, very difficult, doesn't it? I thought you guys handled it, you know, really well. You know, listening back, I thought you gave a couple of strong opinions, but you weren't sort of trying to sort of force thoughts, ideas, whatever down people. But I absolutely, if I was given the option of perhaps assisting my mum, then yeah, I probably would have done, just from a personal point of view. I liked the sort of conversation you guys had in terms of, is it the physical or the mental sort of aspect of it? And I think Andy made a good point about actually it can be the mental side of it as well, rather than just the physical pain. because I know Andy mentioned the locked-in syndrome bit, didn't he? And you might not necessarily, and I don't know, and again, we're not, you know, I'm not a medical expert to know, but you might not necessarily feel physical pain when you're locked in, but it might be that mental torture sort of thing.
Yeah.
And you might actually be completely compos mentis, but actually you just want out sort of thing. So I was a bit of a sort of a, yeah, I probably would have gone down the route of the euthanasia. And then I think the only other one that sprang to mind, I think from memory, was the where he talked about the GCSEs and the exams and things like that. And obviously, I'm in education, so I do think people's education has suffered over the last couple of years. And I do think it probably will continue to suffer if people continue to have time off. I mean, obviously, working in education, you understand the correlation between days off school and performance in terms of grades. So I think anybody that has prolonged periods of time off school, their grades potentially could suffer. I think if there can be struck a balance between coursework or controlled assessments or teacher assessments, then I think if you can do a combination of them all, then that's probably the best way to go. So yeah, so I think from memory they were the sort of questions that, you know, I can't remember any of the other majorly dark ones, if I can say that sort of thing. But no, yeah. So I think, to be honest, I mean, listening back, I think I was very much like you guys. You know, I don't think I would significantly differed massively from you guys, which is nice in a way, but it's always nice to have different opinions and stuff on there. I know Dave played devil's advocate quite a lot, didn't he? So yeah, but what if this, what if that sort of thing, so.
He certainly did, yeah. And how did you find that episode, Andy?
Very good. I think Dave's good at asking a question and then asking a sub-question sort of thing to sort of, you know, change the tactics and sort of make you think a bit more.
He doesn't let you off the hook easy, does he?
No. That's why we drink alcohol. It's made it easier.
Exactly. It just makes you care less, doesn't it? So let's move on from last week. We enjoyed it. And, you know, we will be having Dave on at some point again in the future. It might just be an episode where we just delve into his mind a little bit, get him chatting rather than just asking questions. He said it's something that he'd be interested in doing. So someone else that we always talk about in every single episode as well. And, you know, you went there to talk about the Bears getting a good old tonking off the books. But, you know, there's an opportunity to talk about how you get on against the 49ers this week.
There is an opportunity to talk about how we got on. I might not. I mean, we've got an easy game next week coming up, so that's okay. We're 3-5 at the moment, aren't we? So we've got a pretty easy game this weekend against, I think, some other random team from Pittsburgh. Hopefully going into our bye week, 4-5 will be pretty good. No, honestly, mate, the Bears, honestly, I mean, the love for Matt Nagy obviously is running out massively. Ryan Pace, GM, sort of, you know, there's loads of people calling for changes at the top and this, that, and the other. And they're talking about trading pretty much like the whole of the team and all that sort of stuff. So, but I was a little bit more encouraged, because when you look at the scoring and the way the scoring went, actually into the fourth quarter, we were leading. And we gave up 18 points in the fourth quarter, which obviously made out that the 49ers ran out victors. But Justin Fields is still finding his feet. He's starting to make some better decisions. I think he only passed a rating of about 85.5 or something like that. And
he made a couple of good runs though, didn't he?
Yeah, well, he ran for 109 yards, I think. So I think he was obviously our top rusher, and he went in for a rushing touchdown. I think he threw for another touchdown as well. He's starting to make some better decisions, and that bodes well for us moving forward. I still think, obviously, there's huge issues with the offensive line. What he does need to do is he needs to stop being sacked for like 15, 20 yard losses. You know, he scrambles out of the pocket and then he gets sacked, and it's like, the really good quarterbacks, they don't do that. They'll scramble. If they get sacked, they get rid of it. And you might take a 5-yard, whatever, intentional grounding or whatever, but you never take that 20-yard sack. I think, you know, he's a work in progress, but I sort of like a little bit what I'm seeing. And interestingly, I mean, Allen Robinson, just while we're on the Bears, there was a stat come up on Twitch, and I might be doing him a disservice now, but I'm sure it said that he hasn't dropped a red zone sort of catching attempt in like 2.5 years or something stupid. So if he's targeted in the red zone, he catches it. Might not be for a touchdown. He might only be, you know, he might catch on the 3-yard line, 2-yard line, whatever. But if he's in the red zone, basically within 20 yards, I don't think he's dropped one for like ages. So it's like, fair play, that is. But I think if we can get those two paired up a bit more, and Fields can sort of learn to trust Robinson and vice versa, then we've got we might be going in the right direction, Matt. I'm still not convinced about Nagy at the moment, though. But as I say, we've got an easy game this weekend, so fingers crossed 4-5.
We'll see. Speaking of dropping one, though, the Lions, dude, how did they go on?
Really, really close game.
It was close to being scoreless on your behalf. Very close.
Well, what can I say?
I mean, I'm just glad that we're in the same division as the Lions, because that means we get two victories. I mean, that, you know, it's as simple as that.
It looks a given. And after I know you're saying you've got this easy game this weekend against the Steelers. The week after, we've got the Lions. The Lions are on bye week. And then we've got them the week after. You know, we had an interesting game against the Browns. The Browns aren't that sort of laughable side that they used to be. They're a really good side with Baker Mayfield out of the helm. Yeah. But I tell you what, there were some interesting decisions made in that game by Tomlin and some of the play calls that he made. Did you see Boswell getting banged up?
Oh, I saw that. Yeah, there was that. That was on the fake play. Point or whatever. Trick play, fake point or whatever. Or was it field goal?
Yeah, we were going for a field goal, and instead they let Boswell run with it and make a play. But obviously, you could just sort of see he was running right, and he had no one to throw it to. He wasn't looking across field left. He had his idea. He was going to play it straightforward forward pass. Obviously, he's not the most gifted quarterback in the world. But yeah, he got dinged up, which left us without a field goal kicker for the rest of the game, which meant we always had to go for two, which basically meant if you've ever watched the Steelers go for two, you can always guarantee it ain't happening. We were only ever scored six on off a touchdown. Yeah, it was painful. Yeah, it was really painful.
And you look at, who's the guy from, is it the Chiefs? Is it Heckler? Is it Johnny Heckler, is it? Is that his name, Johnny Heckler? He's a punter, but he was a college quarterback. So he's obviously proper decent, and they go for trick plays all the time, and he can throw like a 20-yard, 30-yard pass. You know, he can proper send it down there. And he's obviously got eyes scanning the field, and he will have, well, actually, if that receiver's not free, then he'll go to an alternate receiver. And whereas Boswell was just like, yeah, I'm going to throw to that guy. And actually, you've got like three defenders on it. She's like, shit, what do I do now? Sort of thing, do you know what I mean?
Some teams, they pull those trick plays, and it looks all seamless. As soon as we go for it, it's like, oh, what now?
Why is it always a team that you seem to support those? Like, why have you done that? It's like every other team, as you said, it looks magical. And then you come to try it and you fudge up. It's like a missed snap, or he drops it, or something happens. You're just like, really? Like, why is it always our teams?
No, it's woeful. But yeah, I think interesting next week. Now, it's probably not going to be talking about it next week because we're recording before that game actually happens. And then the next game, we'll talk a little bit of NFL because we've got Bo over here who is a Saints fan. So we'll be talking about them. Okay. And that's nice to have a little bit of a different aspect.
Yeah.
Did you listen to the episode that myself and Andy recorded?
Yes.
We had a listener get in touch, and he suggested an idea about five beers, all disguised, and we do one a week and see if we can discern what that different beer is. We all have the same beer, so it needs to be in a can that's been disguised or a bottle that's been disguised. Something that we could guess, not something that none of us have had before.
Yeah.
But that sounds like an interesting idea, doesn't it?
Yeah. And so do we all drink the same, and one of us has one different then? Is that the premise?
We'd all have, say we all had Delirium Red in a bottle. The bottle's been disguised, we pour it out, we've got the red colour. Is it Delirium Red? Is it Cherry Choof? Any other cherry beer that can't come to mind.
Yeah. Okay. Depending on the beers that we pick, obviously you guys might be slightly advantageous. You guys drink a lot more, or historically have drank a lot more variety of, sort of craft beers and the type of beers that we now drink. Because, you know, again, I've spoken about this on a previous podcast. You know, my beer drinking sort of range was, I mean, I used to drink a lot, but it was a lot of the same type of thing. Do you know what I mean? It's like just standard lager. It's only really since doing the podcast, Andy, I suppose, is the bad influence amongst us. He's the one that sort of got me into drinking some more craft beers and stuff. And obviously, we drink a lot more craft beers now when we go out. Whereas historically, we go out and be like, "Hey, lager," you know. And it's like, so I think you guys have probably got a bit of one up on me there if we're having the same type of drink. Like, would I recognise Delirium? Possibly, possibly not. I know Andy would, 100%, definitely. You probably would, 100%. Would I recognise the Duvel? I'd recognise the Duvel. Well, to be fair, you could put sauces in it. It would taste like this Duchess. So,
We should do that. We knew a lot of the Duchess, and we can just have a bottle of anything. Just see how much he drinks.
I'll be like, is that the Duchess? Actually, yeah. It's definitely better than the Duchess. Watch this one. Oh, yeah, it's Arsons. Oh, okay. I'm always up for anything that involves drinking, and sort of particularly craft beers in nowadays. So, yeah, I'm up for that. We can do that. I like that.
When a chickadee, that's definitely probably something we'll do in the new year. I think probably unlikely to get it sorted before Christmas.
Yeah.
There you go. I'm missing the C word again already. Didn't say too long, did it? So the old switcheroo needs to happen again soon as well, doesn't it? With the old reload rubbers. I've used up my quota already. How are you guys going along with it?
Dude, you seriously must just be gargling it or something. It's just like...
Yeah. Every meal until it's used up.
Like, was the fully loaded one, and so I used it. I didn't cook, but I used it just as an added extra. So we had like basically like a pasta, like a mushroom chicken, so pasta bait type thing, and put the fully loaded on it. It's absolutely, it was lush. It was like excellent. But yeah, I mean, I will decant into food bags as such if we're ready to do the old swapperoonie again. I think I'm just about out of the packing heat one, which is the one that we used that I had first time round. So I'm just about out of that now. So, but I'm quite happy just to decant into.
Looking forward to try.
Yeah, it is a beauty. It is a good one.
I had that one last night on chicken wrap.
Yeah. It is good. It is very. But yeah, I'm happy. Actually, I'm happy to decant and we'll do the old swapperoonies again whenever we can.
Awesome. Mine all used it. I've used the double action as Todd likes to have it for breakfast on slices of cucumber. Dude, it's a game changer. It's really good. It's ridiculous. It's really, really flavoursome.
On cucumber?
Honestly, slices of cucumber with double action on it.
Okay. I might have to try that then. Okay.
So random. Guys.
It is. It's probably not something that Real Ed Rub would necessarily suggest you do. You're not going to see it in any recipe book. But no, honestly, it's really good. Really good. I'm not sure it's something that Johnny would do because, you know, if something hasn't died on before he eats it, then he ain't interested. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I tell you the one I haven't. What was the one that I had? Was it the garlicky one? I haven't used that quite as much. But that might just. Was it the bagel one?
Oh, the ballistic.
Ballistic. Is it the ballistic? Yeah. Is that one I've got?
Chipotle and garlic, that one.
The ballistic one is the one with the cream label. Whereas they're all black labels, and this one's got the cream label.
I think that's one I've got, but I haven't used much of that at the moment. So
yeah, it's onion and garlic, dude. That was the one when we first received them. I wasn't that interested in trying. I looked at it, I thought maybe it's the colour of the label. I just like those crisp black labels. They look really good. And I saw that one, I thought, nah, there's nothing exciting about it. And then, oh my word, dude, that one blew me away. I could literally eat that on every meal. And obviously, given that I'm using it up pretty quickly,
But no, yeah, that's the one that I haven't. That's the one I haven't used. But it, as I said, I could probably use that more because it's not spicy. Anything's got any sort of hint of sort of spice or heat about it, it would only be me cooking for me. Because, like I said, the girls and Jenny aren't massive sort of heat fans. So that's why the packing heat one. I was using it quite a bit for my stuff, but it just didn't seem to be going down because effectively there's just me using it as opposed to, like I say, the fully loaded one. Abby had a little bit and Jenny had a little bit. On the sort of pasta baking stuff, they said they quite liked it. But anything sort of heat-wise, it's only me anyway that eats it. So, but now I'm happy to do old switcheroonie if we're ready. I'm good with that.
Awesome sauce. Yeah, definitely. Go on, I've talked a few topics out there. Has anybody else got anything that they want to talk about tonight?
The only thing really for me, I mean, obviously I missed sort of the last couple of weeks and stuff. And I know that, Adam, you particularly mentioned the C word and stuff. And I know we are now into November stuff and we need to look at him. Look at him, you see. He mentions a C word. He's all happy. How many Christmas films have you seen this week then, dude?
I had National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation on earlier.
It's a decent film, to be fair.
It is a good film.
So what? I mean, I know, and I am going to throw it out there just because it's the C word, and I've missed you guys for a couple of weeks. So what are your sort of major plans and stuff? Have you got any major plans and stuff? Anything majorly going on over the festive period or not? Or might be a bit early to reveal sort of plans or such, but
we're hosting Christmas here this year, which I'm looking forward to. I think him will probably be doing the cooking there, not me. So we went out and we bought into Project Fear, dude. You know, with all this stories about turkey shortages.
So you've got it already, have you?
Well, we've been and booked it, been and paid for it, yeah. So we've gone down and we've got it from a farm shop rather than relying on getting it from one of the supermarkets. So we've got a big old bird, and I'm not talking about the mother-in-law. Wait. So yeah, so we're I should keep my voice down actually because he's in the front room. Yeah, so we've got the turkey everything booked, so we've got it all sort of planned in, and yeah, really, really looking for in terms of Christmas shopping for the kids, dude, it's all done. Wow. Obviously, if you ever listen to this, Matilda and JJ, it is Santa. It's nothing to do with me. But actually, it is nothing to do with me.
Yeah, I was going to say, it is nothing to do with you at all.
Yes, so that's all done. Although, if anybody wants to tweet me at beans_TBR with ideas of what I can get my wife for Christmas, do so, because I have not got a Scooby-Doo. I have not got a clue.
You all sorted it then, Andy, or you, any sort of idea? What's your, obviously, your sort of, your family has grown as such, so what are your plans then?
Gobble, gobble. We've got like the same thing we've done the last few years of Amy's parents coming around. So they live near some farms who have some turkeys, so they're going to bring one of them. But I think a stepdad's the one that normally does the old...
Oh, really?
Yeah, okay. They're going to be bringing one of them. Are you actually going to... popping over.
Are you plucking it there then, are you? Or is that something, is it pre-done? Or you're going to be like spitting feathers literally? Or
Nah, it's pre-done. I think, can't remember if it's like a week or two before Christmas, they do all the necks and then they pluck them and all that rubbish. And then... wash it and do all that stuff.
Wow.
So yeah, So it works out well, because that means like missus and her mum will be cooking, and now he's sat down here with a grog.
Drink. Yeah, exactly. Drink. It's great, isn't it? This, honestly, you get to this sort of festive pit, it's just like any excuse. Oh, look, it's midweek. Yeah, drink. It's fine. It's not a problem.
Just on the subject there of breaking birds' necks, I thought I'd chime in with a story that my brother told me. My brother, when he was at university, he was in the University Army Corps, and they did a weekend away with the SAS doing the outdoor training. One of the things they were given was a chicken, and that was all they were given to eat. And it was, I should say, alive. Well, they basically had to wring its neck. They had to snap its neck. And the way you do it is literally you choke the chicken, you get your fingers around its neck and just whip it down and just bust its neck, and that's it's done. So my brother, obviously, you know, he's a hardy lad, and he did that. And then two of the lads he was on it with, though, were Muslim. So in terms of their meat, obviously, it's got to be halal. So instead of breaking the neck, they were allowed to slice its throat.
And
you know, now neither of them, I should say, could do it. And one of them sat there with the knife to the chicken's neck for so long that actually it laid an egg in that time. She was like, happy days, that's me sorted.
That's it, I'm not going to go hungry now. That's it, I'll just eat that instead.
And the good news is that I say the chickens live to see another day. It probably was just another day when the next group rolled in the next day and took them out.
I got a little story about something like that. My high school had a farm, and I think I've mentioned it before, I know. We had this like horticulture lesson, so we're like walking through the farm, you can hear all the turkeys going, and then like halfway through it just goes silent.
That's quite depressing, isn't it, really?
Yeah, it's weird hearing the silence after all the, you know, clucking or whatever they do.
Well, I like the silence of the lambs. That's right.
You beat me to that. I was trying to think of the silence of the turkeys, but I thought silence of the lambs. But you beat me to it. But never mind. There we go.
A bit of a lesson ring to it. I knew that the silence of the turkeys. At Christmas, maybe.
No, I mean, other than the C word, there's various world leaders having a conference at the moment, aren't they? So if I don't know, have you seen any of it at all, or have you picked up any of the stuff in the news about it, or? I know Greta's made a bit of an impact, and obviously Mr. Attenborough's made a bit of an impact, hasn't he? So,
fair play to him for speaking up about these things. But it's all fairly ironic, isn't it, though, really? When you see, you know, old Joe Biden, you know, arriving in his cavalcade of however many cars, was it 60 cars or something?
Something like that, yeah.
They're all floating on private jet. It's the irony of it all, isn't it, really?
I know, and that's the thing, is that we've got to save the planet. You've got like 60 world leaders flying in on 60 private jets with an entourage of X number of people. And I know that they did, I don't know if it's a one show or something, they interviewed Bear Grylls, and he did this thing with Barack Obama, and I think they were in Alaska or somewhere, and it was like they basically talked to Bear Grylls, and they're saying he wanted to show the impact of the environment and what we're doing and all of that, and they sort of said, was he just you and like Barack Obama? And he's like, well, no, normally you'd have like a couple of film crews and stuff there just filming us from different angles. But he said there was like, because it was Barack Obama, there was like snipers on the hills, there were drones, there was aircraft flying around. He said literally you'd expect a few sort of Secret Service people there to make, and I'm sure Bear Grylls said there was like 40 Secret Service there, and as well as that, as I say, there were people on all the mountain ranges, snipers and all sorts of stuff. So he said it was a bit surreal, and he's trying to explain like the impact of what we're doing to the world and the environment and all of that, yet you've got all of these people around basically just to make sure that one guy is okay, sort of thing. Do you know what I mean? So it is a bit ironic. And obviously there's photos of Biden, and there was one where he's like, is that it? And he's asleep, and then there's another one of Boris next to, like, I think he was with Attenborough, and there's like three or four people wearing a mask, and Boris wasn't. And then he's like, the sheer, I can't remember the phrase, it came up, it was a photo come up on Twitter, and it's like the sheer face of the guy, you know, he's like sitting next to like a 90-year-old David Attenborough or whatever, can't even be bothered to wear a mask, and actually can't even be bothered to stay awake. He just bosses his fattest. He's literally just sitting there, just asleep, and you're just like, really, Boris? Like, come on, fella. I mean, I know the long days, and you've got to host this, that, and the other, but keep your eyes open, kid. Come on.
I know, but we sort of laugh about him, and he, you know, don't get me wrong, like, the clip of him trying to get his umbrella working at the funeral, it's funny. You know, I'm not going to say it's not funny, because it is funny, but gee whiz, we voted for, well, I didn't vote for him, but people voted for this guy to be in charge of our country and take us through Brexit, which is a terrible idea anyway, but don't get me started on that one. But he was left in charge of delivering it, and then you got coronavirus hitting, and he's in charge of that as well. Honestly, it's like having, you'd have been better having bloody Lollinardi in charge.
It is bad. And look, you know, Boris, I say love him or hate him, he's certainly a character. I mean, I remember when he did the, was it, what was the football thing.
Oh, yeah, and he rugby tackled a child.
Soccer aid.
Yeah, that, yeah. That, they see, that's, so Boris is just there, like, and it's just like on the touchline or whatever. And he just bumbles into this lad and just basically just rugby tackles him. He's just like, really? Like, come on, dude, seriously? And then he's giving it all like the big earner. Oh, just, yeah, he is just a bit. And I hope, I say he's seen as a bit of a joke figure as such, but I hope he just isn't a joke figure in the eyes of everybody else around the world. You know, we see him as a joke figure maybe because we've seen him. And I just hope that they don't, people around the world don't view him as that. Do you know what I mean?
They will.
Mm. Yeah, well, yeah, they might, yeah.
There was a picture of all the leaders throwing a coin in a fountain, wasn't there? Like making a wish to end, like, the climate thing or something. I was like, yeah, you got more chance of that coming true than these clowns sorting it out.
Yeah. You have.
I know that Attenborough, and you know, you can't really talk anything about the environment and the world and stuff and saving the planet without sort of Attenborough. And he is a legend, you know, he's an absolute force of nature, that guy. He is brilliant. And you listen to what he says, and I know that he was actually quite complimentary about Greta Thunberg as well and what she's trying to do in terms of raising. And look, you know, I can't make a mind about her really, Greta Thunberg. Has she just been lucky and then just jumped on the bandwagon of her own publicity? And it, was she just, I don't know where she came from. Was she just like a random person that made a comment and then the world news picked up on it? She thought, oh, I'll run with this. And do you know what I mean? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know either, to be honest with you. I just saw a comment though about the people that she was speaking to and her cohorts all wearing their disposable masks. And it's like, she's going to talk about climate change and recycling, don't everybody be wearing something on your face that's going to take 300 years, yeah, or however long these things take to, you know, to till they return to the earth.
Yeah,
it's crazy. It's crazy, you know. Yeah. If you're going to put yourself out there and talk about the things, you've got to be whiter than white, which is ironic, yeah, when we talk about Boris talking about that sort of thing.
Yeah,
but you've got to be beyond reproach.
Yeah, and again, as you said, Ad, it's the irony of all these world leaders. You know, they're flying in using private jets and the fuels and the entourage and the cars and all of that. And you, if you were actually to measure the footprint of all what it would be for all of these people to fly in and go to that conference, you'd be amazed. Do you know what I mean? And it's actually, yeah, at a conference about, yeah, can you not do it virtually? I know it doesn't have the impact, but sure, it'd be better just do it virtually on like a massive, great big screen. You know, bloody game shows can do it where they say, oh, look at our virtual audience. And it's like everybody there in their home on a bloody Zoom call. And it's like, just do that. Yeah, world leaders.
We manage it once a week.
Yeah, absolutely. We don't have many technical difficulties either, do we? So, you know, we're all good. He says.
My internet connection's playing up a little bit tonight, boy.
But do you know what I mean? Instead of just flying everybody there, why can you not just do it virtually? Because then, as you said, the irony isn't there then if you've got all these bloody private jets flying around. I'm all for it. I am all for it. And I do think we should do everything that we can in order to think about and safeguard our future and future generations and all that. I don't know whether it's too much in your face at the moment. I don't know. I'm a bit undecided yet as to actually, I get the importance of it, obviously, but is it being not forced down our throats as such, but is it something that we can just be allowed to make our own decisions on, or is it something that we need to be forced into the decisions we make? I don't know.
When we did the This Is a Beer podcast, we talked about sustainability, didn't we? Mm. And we looked about the impact that just the brewing industry has upon it.
Yeah.
And that's only a very small fraction of industry. And it was huge. And then we looked about what we can do.
You know, change starts with one person. If one person makes a change, the next person makes a change, the next person, and so on and so forth, then yeah, fair enough. But you sort of do think, actually, what can one person do, or what can 100 people do, or what can 1,000 people do? It needs everybody to be doing it. Do you know what I mean? If you're going to make that significant of a change, it needs everybody to do it. And I just don't know whether our generation are invested in it enough. I was talking to Jenny about it, and she said, you know, there were effectively kids in the next generation. So, you know, you're talking sort of mid-20-year-olds, and they were considering, oh, do we really want to have kids? Because do we want to raise them in an environment that might not be sustainable and this, that, and the other? And I wonder whether or not it's that generation that are more invested in it than us.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
There's the old Indian or Native American, sorry, proverb, where they talk about not so much inheriting the world from our parents and from their parents, but we're borrowing it from our children. And I think if we could change our mindset to work about it that way, it's what we, yeah, hand down to them, maybe we'd feel a little bit different. But we were brought up on the idea of, if I want a can of Coke, I can. It's going to go in the landfill, and it gives us stuff about how long, yeah, it takes to biodegrade.
Yeah.
And that word was pronounced horribly.
Yeah, that was a bad pronunciation. But yeah, and so I do wonder whether or not the next generation are the ones that are more heavily invested in it. But look, it's happening at the moment. It's going on. We need to be aware of it. We need to sort of obviously be aware of the consequences of it. But I'm just not 100% convinced that as a generation we are. And whether we should be or not, I'm not sure.
Yeah, I think we probably should be. But the truth of the matter is, you know, probably this old dog's too old to learn new tricks.
That one, by the way, I've just opened it. That one, it's 5%. That's just a golden pale ale. It's okay, but it's not quite as good as the first one, the trap one. So it's okay.
I don't think I've had either of those.
But the trap was very nice. So this one's okay. You said, was it a Voscek one? Was it a
Voscek? Yeah.
Was it a Voscek one? You said.
Yeah, flavour of junipers. And the Imperial Creme Brulee as well is a really good one.
I think I sent you a photo of that, didn't I? Saying, have you tried that one? You're like, yeah, I think I've tried that one. But no, that one is, it's okay. I definitely would have that trap again. That was pleasant. That was very, very pleasant. So sorry for the little interlude there, but I just thought,
I was going to ask you a question anyway, dude. Did you want to tell us a little bit about, we had to move the recording to Monday night last week. Because you have plans on Tuesday. Did you want to tell us about that?
Yeah, so we were talking off air earlier. So I drove home from work last Friday. Spoke to my daughter. So I was like, where's mum? And she's all shining. Well, why? Anyway, it turned out we were going away. So I was like, okay, that's why we had to move. Well, so we moved the podcast initially because on the Tuesday, I was going to Riverdance. So we bought some Riverdance tickets. And it was a Christmas present from Christmas 2019. They obviously bought because of COVID. It, you know, got postponed. And it was on last Tuesday. Dude, it was mint. But I genuinely proper enjoyed it. I've been wanting to watch it for ages.
Because that was like a bucket list thing for you, wasn't it?
Yeah, I proper wanted to. I mean, obviously, Michael Flatley wasn't in it because he's about 127 now, however old he is. But, you know, it was something that I desperately wanted to see. And the story of the one that we watched on last Tuesday is slightly different than the original one because it's like a 25 year celebration of it. So there's a couple of different dances in there and stuff. So it's not the actual original Riverdance. And I sent Ad a text and he sent one back saying, I did watch some Cossack dancing once and actually strangely quite enjoyed it. And there was a little bit of Cossack dancing in this. So I was like, okay, that's cool. But honestly, like, it's mesmerizing. The music, the setting, the proper is mesmerizing. And I can't, honestly, I can't tell you how as much as I enjoyed it. It was brilliant. Really, really, really had a top night. But that was why we had to move it from Tuesday to Monday. And then obviously I wasn't back for the Monday because we were going away. So that's why it wasn't here last Monday either. So, but no, honestly, I mean, whether it's your thing or not, it's proper, proper worth it. I really enjoyed it. Really,
you
really
can't tell us how much you enjoyed it, but you can show us.
Yes, absolutely. It was a couple of the sort of emojis and the memes or whatever. Andy popped on. I was like, yeah, that would be me, just like giving it all like this, so a bit of dancing. But no, I'm not going to do my river dance impression because I would obviously fail drastically, probably hurt myself. But yeah, it was just the sound that when you start looking at the dancing, obviously the shoes on the floor and the sort of tapping and it's. And the thing that got me after the first about 10 minutes was they're perfectly in time. And, you know, sometimes you see dance troops and you think, yeah, they're pretty good, but there's like just the odd one here or there that's just slightly out of sync or whatever. Not at all. They were just every single mark they hit. And it was just like, instead of having 20 people dancing and hitting the feet at the same time on the floor and doing all the steps and stuff, it was like one person. Because they were that in time, you couldn't distinguish any difference between any of the sounds. It honestly was brilliant. Really, really, really good.
Oh, fair play. So it's a bucket list item then that you've ticked off. Is that, did it live up to your expectation? I'm going to guess that from what you just said that it probably did.
Yeah. And you know, years ago when it first came out, I was like, it'd have been meant to have seen it perhaps down in the West End or perhaps go to New York to see it or wherever, you know, you go to Broadway or wherever it may be. But in terms of an actual, I'd have liked to have seen the original one to see perhaps how it was slightly different than the 25-year celebration. But, yeah, it was a bit of a bucket list for me because I'd never seen anything like it before. For years, I'd been wanting to say that I'd wanted to see it. And I thought I'd missed the opportunity. But then, obviously, this anniversary tour came around and it was like, yeah, 100% I was in there. And it was a ticket off for me. And it was. It was me. We went there, had a couple of drinks and And it was only in Royal Stoke. It was, you know, it was in middle of Stoke and stuff. So it wasn't anywhere like massively fancy. But just you go in there and the aura, and they start playing a bit of Celtic music. And actually, a couple of the musicians there, there was a girl playing. There was a flute. There was a violinist and unbelievable. There was a clarinet player. Are they called clarinetists? Whatever they're called, I don't know. But it was honestly the whole.
Clarinettos. Oh no, that's the Chockeyes.
Yeah, not that dude. But honestly, I know they get selected because they're at the top of their field and they're going on a tour and they are the best violinist or the best cellist or the best flutist or whatever. But everything about it, dude, was I couldn't fault it. Honestly, couldn't fault it. It was brilliant. So as a bucket list stuff, if all of my bucket list items live up to that, then I'll be a pretty happy guy.
Oh, fair play. Is something to appeal to you, Andy? Be on your bucket list?
I remember when the original Riverdance thing came out, and I saw a bit of it on TV, but I was not interested in dance stuff.
No.
I know I look like a dancer, but no.
Well, you're built like a dancer, you know, a ballet dancer, maybe, I don't know.
Wait, but I mean, obviously...
I probably look like Michael Flatley with big up.
Well, I mean, obviously...
Michael Flatley.
Yeah, I mean, it came to fame as a filler in the Eurovision Song Contest. That's how it started.
I was going to say it started as something, just literally...
It's a dance.
Yeah,
it's almost like a throwaway sort of, not quite a throwaway. Oh, we're just going to cut to a break now, so we'll put some Irish dancers on the stage while the commercials are on type thing. But it was basically like, as you said, it was like to just segue from one to the next, and then they obviously developed that, and from that it spawned this massive, and then obviously then the Lord of the Dance was the second one that Michael Flatley did. And I haven't seen that. I'd quite like to see that again, but it honestly, dude, yeah, brilliant, loved it.
Just thinking that dancing, not my thing, and I don't like it, and I'm not really interested in watching it, but the story of the beans in the church, that I always want to see this reenacted.
Yeah, I tell you what, dude, I've seldom been more embarrassed in my entire life. So the story then that Andy enjoys so much. Evil Blue.
I wasn't even there. It's brilliant.
Kim and I. Oh no, this is it. It was just it's so gloriously told. Anybody who knows me knows I am not a dancer. I don't have any moves in my arsenal at all. I can promise you that. And I don't think anybody would be surprised to hear that. And Kim and I had been together not particularly long, and we'd gone to church at Christmas, which is not something we regularly do. And I forget why. I'm sure there was a reason for it. And anyway, it was absolutely ram-packed full. It was actually the church that we later got married in. And they didn't have enough room for me to sit on one of the aisles. You know, they're taking up the aisle. So I politely, you know, you guys all go first. And there's no space for me. So they came and they put a chair so I could sit there in the aisle. And it was a bit of a hippie church. You know, they played new age music and all that kind of stuff. And the band fired up, and this woman was sort of saying, she wasn't feeling the magic of Christmas. And then she became inspired and started to dance. And she wanted to pick a dance partner to dance in this bloody great big huge church in front of a whole load of people. So who does she pick? The Muggins here, you ain't sat in the aisles with everybody else. You sat there like a bloody a tool, basically, which is what I look like when I dance. And literally, so she pulled me up, started dancing. Now, I don't think I did, but Kim said I was doing a bit of the old bump and grind. On this
I just imagine, I just like thinking about like some sort of like, I know R&B sort of, you know, like sort of proper smooth. He's giving it all this, giving it all. He's just like, oh man alive, what's he doing?
And he's never been
chill. There was nothing smooth about it, dude. I did not. No, but no, we did, because we had to go back like every, you know, because it was outside of our diocese. We had to go back there and quite, you know, I think it was, well, I didn't go off as perhaps I should have been, but the wife went. And yeah, so we had to go quite regularly. And then, like I say, we got married there.
Yeah, dude. I've just got visions of you doing a bit of bump and grind with blue rinsed sort of granny in the aisle of a church. Just it's horrible.
Oh yeah, dude. That, I mean, it's a low point for me. You're meeting people for the first time, I think it was, or maybe I hadn't met them a handful of times before. And yeah, forced to dance in front of a church full of strangers, and I could see their smiling faces, enjoying me squirming. And I, you know me, I'm shy. I was bright red.
Dude, oh, I mean, how long have I known you, dude? And I reckon I could probably count on one hand the amount of times that I've seen you dance, and that's in like 30 or 35 years of knowing you, whatever it is. You know what I mean? So
I did the first dance at my wedding, and even then. And it was just shuffling around, standing on Kim's dress.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, well, yeah, I was obviously there for that. So I do. Yeah, I remember that. So
yeah, then I was popping up the bar with Andy after that. We're on the old whiskies. Missed out on the cigars, though, unfortunately. I think I was off having my photo taken.
Yeah, no, I do remember. But no, you and dancing is not a good combination.
It's not. It really is not. It really is not. Now just imagine me river dancing.
No, that would be bad. To be fair, dude, obviously you river dancing, the shoes must be relatively slipping. They're obviously still capped. So I can imagine you doing yourself a proper injury on them. You'd just be like, you'd be like a bloody drowning giraffe or something on the stage. You would be. It was funny because Abby, when we went, Abby was like, and she won't like me for saying this, but she was like, are they stamping really loud? Because like you can hear them. It's like, abs, there's like a microphone on the floor. So like, and she's like, oh yeah, so she's proper like amazing, like how you get this sound. Like it's just a microphone, and you wonder why when they walk off the stage you can't hear them. It's because they turn the mics down. So it's like, and she, then she's like, all right, sort of thing. But it did take her a while to go like, oh, I didn't see anything on the floor. It's like, did you not notice, like, there's a time that obviously, you know, the sound it generates, it is phenomenal. And they obviously have lots of different microphones on various bits of the floor and under the floor and stuff. But now obviously when they walk off, you can't hear them. They're going. But when they're actually meant to be dancing, you can't hear them. And obviously they turn the microphones up and stuff. So it is phenomenal. But yeah, Abby won't like me for mentioning that. But she's like, oh, right, I didn't realise that sort of thing.
Surely they should have danced off, you know what I mean? Come on.
They did dance off. Yeah, to be fair, they danced off and they danced on, and yeah. But yeah, it was decent. And if there's anybody out there who is wondering what maybe to get their wife, girlfriend, if they're half into sort of dancing, they want a nice evening theatre,
I would need to come and dance with a random old lady.
That wasn't what I was going to say, but that might sell tickets as well, dude. You never know.
Be a lot of refunds, I suspect.
Beans does dancing. There you go. There's a.
Here's a question for this. This is one of the topics that Kim wanted me to bring up was Adele. Obviously, back. I don't. What do you enjoy Adele's music?
I do quite enjoy a couple of her songs. I think she's gone a little bit Kelly Clarkson in terms of sort of, oh my god, like that's my marriage, that's my dad, that's my family, that's my this, that's my that sort of thing. So I think she's gone a little bit morose in the sort of subject matter that she writes songs about. I do quite like some of her songs, I do have to admit, but the new one, not sure.
Bloody awful. Andy?
I think she's one of them people that's really trained at singing one style, and that is it. So she tries to do with like dance stuff and all this, and it's just awful. And she has half the stuff written for her anyway. And, I still don't like it.
I do wonder whether or not you, and some people get labelled a one-trick pony, but if that one-trick pony sells fudging millions of records, then why would you not do that? Do you know what I mean? Why would you try to do different types of songs if you can't? And if actually the big ballads is what sells you, then why not?
You're a multi-millionaire, though. Do you want to keep doing the same drivel, or do you want to do something you enjoy? And I don't think she enjoys it. I think she just does it for the sake of doing it.
Do you think she does it because not she's told, but that sells music and people? I mean, yeah. Is it a new album? I don't even know what a new album's called. Is it like 25 or 37, or is it another number or something? I don't know.
I'm assuming so.
Yeah.
That annoys me as well. But Kim's question was, so obviously that's new music. It highly tipped that should be Christmas number one, because I don't know, is X Factor not happening this year? So that's that one ruled out.
Oh, I don't know.
But which musician would you like to see trot out some new music just in time for Christmas so that it's slipped into your stocking? I'll go to Andy first because I'm sure he'll have an answer.
Corey Taylor, lead singer for Slipknot, did one.
I was just going to say Rage Against the Machine or something like that. Didn't they get a Christmas number one a few years ago because they beat the X Factor guy?
Killing in the name, yeah. Killing
yeah.
In the name. I don't know, it's been back Wham.
Bit hard to do that, dude.
Well, yeah.
You see, back in the day, again, you see, I obviously was a bit of a Queen fan and we all know that, but that would be quite difficult to sort of bring him back, sort of thing. So
maybe if they did like, or something where they got like 20 people do it, you know, like a Live Aid or something like that.
Like a Band Aid, Live Aid.
Maybe something like that.
Yeah, but the music these days is shit, so you'd have like proper, like crappy artists on, wouldn't you? Do you know what I mean?
No.
Yeah, but how would you go from like
Adele to like mumble rappers and stuff?
Whatever? So you go from like a big ballad singer to like a grime and drill artist or whatever. It's just like, really? Like, because music these days is crap, so.
Maybe anything but Bublé.
Anything but Buble. Anything but Buble. Anything but Moz. Because like Christmas is meant to be like a happy time, so you know you don't Moz on your Christmas number one, do you?
He's recorded a new album, fully enough, called Bonfire of the Teenagers, and he's touting it around, trying to get it published. Allegedly, doesn't have anybody who's willing to publish it. I find that very difficult to believe. I find it disappointing. I hope we get to hear. He'd released a couple of demos on his website. So if you go to like morrisseyofficial.com, you can hear him there. I can see Gaz grimacing as I say that. But listen, I think we're going to call this episode a little bit short tonight, just purely and simply because we're experiencing some internet difficulties. You guys have broken up a number of times, and I fear it is my internet that's causing the problems, because if you're watching this on the YouTube, you'll see that I am in my study / toy room. It's a toy room that's slowly been converted into a study, but it's about 90% toy room, as you can see behind me, and I think it's causing some problems. So we'll call this one a little bit short, and I'm going to go move into the other room for when we record the second episode that we're going to record tonight. So want to say your goodbyes?
Enjoyed this tonight, guys. It's great to be back after missing for a couple of weeks. Yeah, look forward to the next one. Yeah, catch you later.
Cool. Andy?
It's good having the gang back together. I'll throw in a Morrissey quote. Can we build it? Yes, we can.
Well, yeah, I guess it's making me cough, that, isn't it, you swine?
And on that note,
let's just finish it there, because you know what, to be fair, can we build it on this internet connection? No, we can't. See you later, folks.